Hare Krishna.
Pavitra Madhavi, are you there? I think Madhavi dropped off. Yes, Prabhu, Hare Krishna. So today's class will be given by His Grace Adi Gadadhar Prabhu. Prabhu, we're very fortunate to have you on the call. You can take over. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prithi Vilasini Mataji and Pavitra Madhavi Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Kamodaki Mataji. Dandavat Pranam to all the devotees. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. We are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 19, Verse Number 237. Eta bali prabhutan re kaila alingana varanasi chali bare prabhur haila mana. Translations by His Divine Grace, Sri Labhai Charana Aravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Srila Rupa Goswami. The Lord then decided to go to the city of Banaras. Verse number 238. Prabhate uthiyaya be kari lagamana tabe tanra pade rupa kare nivedana. Translation, the next morning, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arose and prepared to leave for Varanasi, Banaras, Srila Rupa Goswami submitted the following statement at the Lord's lotus feet.
Agyahoya Ashi Muni Sri Charana Sange Sahitena Pari Muni Virahatarange.
Translation. If you give me permission, I shall go with your lordship. It is not possible for me to tolerate the waves of separation.
Prabhu kohe tomar kartavya amar vachana nikate ashiyacha tumi yaha vrindavana.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, your duty is to carry out my order. You have come near Vrindavan. Now you should go there.
Vrindavana haite tumi gauda desha diya amare mili banila chalete asiya.
Translation. Later, you can go from Vrindavan to Jagannath Puri through Bengal, Gaudadesh. There, you will meet me again. We'll stop here at verse number 241.
Om Agyanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदन्याय कृष्णप्रेमा प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्य नाम्ने गौरातुसे नमः। पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं। हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. I would like to again offer my humble obeisances at the lotus feet of all the devotees who are listening. Thank you very much for giving me your kind association and engaging me in your service. We are continuing our study of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj, very mercifully translated into English by Srila Prabhupada. We have just seen and read the divine instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his dear disciple, Srila Rupa Goswami. And the verses that we read today, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has completed his instructions, Rupa Shiksha, to Srila Rupa Goswami, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got up and embraced Srila Rupa Goswami. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made a decision to go to Banaras, the city of Banaras. And when Rupa Goswami heard that, he offered his obeisances at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and petitioned him, requested him, that Mahaprabhu, I cannot bear separation from you. If you kindly give me permission, it is my desire to accompany you. I want to be with you. I want to serve you. Wherever you go, Mahaprabhu, it is my desire that I should come with you. I should follow you. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replies to Srila Rupa Goswami, my dear Rupa, your kartavya, your duty is to follow my instructions. Your duty is to carry out my orders. Now, you are not very far from Vrindavan. It is my order that you should go to Vrindavan. Then in the future, after some time, from Vrindavan, you can come to Jagannath Puri through Bengal. And then when you come to Jagannath Puri from Vrindavan through Bengal, then I will meet you again in Jagannath Puri. So these verses that we read today, five verses, they are extremely instructive for all of us. So let us try to dive deep into what is going on. Rupa Goswami requested Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he wants to never give up his personal association. Always stay with him, be with him, follow him and serve him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing Rupa Goswami that no, your duty is to follow my instructions. instead of being with me, you be with my instructions. Instead of serving me personally, I want you to serve my instructions. How essential this teaching is to all of us. And if we study the history of Vaishnavism, this is a consistent theme everywhere in the Vaishnav society. Serving the instructions of one's spiritual master is the most important thing, is the most important duty for any disciple. Now, the instruction may be that you stay with me and serve me as my personal servant or as my personal secretary. Or the instruction may be that you go out and you carry out this particular service. Whatever we have been instructed by our spiritual master or the representatives, the bona fide authorized representatives of our spiritual master, we should do that with enthusiasm and determination. That is the best way to serve our spiritual master. Once Srila Prabhupada commented when some of his disciples proposed that they would like to travel with him wherever he went, they would like to be with him because being away from him was just maya. Srila Prabhupada said that you look at this mosquito, it's trying to sting me, trying to suck my blood. This mosquito is very close to me. So being close to me is not important. Serving me is important. You may be very close to me, but you may be giving me pain. That is not good. It's better you stay away from me, but carry out my orders, carry out my instructions. That will help you make greater spiritual advancement, and that will please me. So just being close, physically close to one's spiritual master is not as important as being anywhere in this world and carrying out the orders and instructions of one's spiritual master. So for the next 30-40 minutes, let us analyze how in our Vaishnava society this is a recurrent theme. So we will see three examples. Last week, last Friday, was the appearance day, or was it was a disappearance day of Sripada Ramanujacharya. Riti Vilasin Mataji, do you know? Was it the disappearance day of Sripada Ramanujacharya?
Yes.
So last week was the disappearance day of Sripada Ramanujacharya. And yesterday was the appearance day of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. So if it is all right with all of you, we will see from the exemplary lives of these two great acharyas how this instruction that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving us through the divine pages of Chaitanya Charitamrit is actually done. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is instructing that it is the duty of the disciple to follow the orders of the spiritual master instead of just being with the spiritual master. So let us analyze this. See, being with the spiritual master may give certain pleasure, certain sense of security to our mind. But carrying out the instructions of the spiritual master, whether we are in close physical proximity or we are not in close physical proximity of our spiritual master, but carrying out the instructions keeps us internally connected with the spiritual master. And the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta is that connection is always internal. You see, the gopis of Vrindavan, and for that matter all the Brajavasis, when Sri Krishna left Vrajadham, at least from the external vision, and he went to Mathura and Dwarka and Hastinapur, the Brajavasis were always in external separation from Krishna. But internally, they were intimately, tightly connected with Krishna. because through their inner meditation, through their inner remembrance on Krishna, they were united with Krishna internally. And that internal union is real union. We may be sitting in a Bhagavatam class, we may be sitting in the temple and thinking of something else. Or we may be sitting at home and listening to Krishna Katha and being completely absorbed in Krishna Katha. That is better. So internal absorption is transcendental to our external situation. So first let us talk about Sripada Ramanujacharya. This is one of my favorite pastimes. Sripada Ramanujacharya, he came after Sripada Shankaracharya. And Shankaracharya established the teaching of impersonalism. So Sripada Ramanujacharya had a real tough job to accomplish. He had to establish pure bhakti when the entire Indian subcontinent was saturated with three things. Number one, Buddhism. Number two, Jainism. So Buddhism and Jainism, they are more or less atheistic religions which teach voidism, that the ultimate reality is that nothing exists. Shunyavad. Everything is a zero. And the other thing that was prevalent was impersonalism, the philosophy of Shankaracharya, which is everything is one. There is no variety. Everything is one, and other than Brahman, everything else is a illusion. So that Nirvisheshavad, there is no variegatedness. That is Nirvisheshavad. So Shunyavad and Nirvisheshavad. And the third thing was either demigod worship or atheism. So some people were outright atheists, some were demigod worshippers. And then there were impersonalists or voidists throughout the Indian subcontinent. And Vaishnavism, pure Vaishnavism, existed, but it was pushed to the sidelines. Yes, Sri Sampradaya existed even before Sripada Ramanujacharya. And Nimbarka Sampradaya also existed. Kumar Sampradaya also existed. Brahma Sampradaya also existed. But they were completely sidelined. Completely sidelined. They were this minuscule population who were devotees. So Sripada Ramanujacharya, being such a powerful acharya, he successfully established the dignity and the sanctity of Vaishnava Siddhanta. And he completely refuted Advaitavad, which was the philosophy of Sripad Shankaracharya. And he established that the supreme reality is Lord Narayan, and the aim of life is to serve Lord Narayan. And he gave a purely theistic explanation to all the Vedic literatures. So he very quickly became popular, and hundreds and thousands of people were joining the movement of Sri Vaishnavism, of Sripada Ramanujacharya. So certain people, they became very insecure. Some people who were impersonalists, they became insecure. Some people who were demigod worshippers, they became insecure that if Ramanujacharya has his way, the entire population will be converted into Vaishnavas. How can we let that happen? then we will also have to convert, or nobody will take us seriously. We will be pushed to the sidelines. Such was the great influence of Sripada Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya's disciple, a very prominent disciple, was Kuresh. You see, in our ISKCON, generally, the etiquette is that as long as one's spiritual master is alive in this world, the disciples don't become spiritual masters themselves. They do not accept their own disciples. And this is good out of etiquette, and especially now because with communication and transportation, there is so much facility for spiritual masters to travel far and wide and initiate disciples almost all over the world. So there is no need for the disciples of the spiritual masters to take on their own disciples, as long as their spiritual master is alive and able to do his services. But in those days, there was no transportation like we have today. There was no communication like we have today. There was no internet, there was no postal service, no aeroplanes, no trains, no cars. So disciples were allowed, qualified disciples were allowed to have their own disciples. So Sripada Ramanujacharya's disciple was Kuresh, and Kuresh also had some disciples, even when Sripada Ramanujacharya was on this planet manifesting his leelas. Can any of you give any more examples of how disciples of a spiritual master took on disciples even when their spiritual master was still alive from our Gaudiya Vaishnava history? So yesterday was the appearance day of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, for example. So when Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya and Shamananda Pandit, they were sent by their Shiksha Guru, Srila Jiva Goswami, from Vrindavan to different parts of the world, Orissa and Bengal, to preach Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they accepted their own disciples. Narottam Das Thakur accepted many disciples, and Srinivas Acharya accepted many disciples. Birambar, King Birambar, entire kingdom, Srinivas Acharya made disciples. And Narottam Das Thakur also accepted so many disciples in Kheturi. And they did this while Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Loknath Goswami were still alive. Hriday Chaitanya Goswami were still alive. So when their spiritual master was still alive, they accepted their own disciples. Because in those days, you know, there was no transportation. And so to increase the outreach, they would do that. But now, we don't do that as an etiquette. So anyway, Kuresh had a disciple called Chaturgram. And somehow, he was envious of Kuresh's proximity to Ramanujacharya. And there were some other differences also. So he had a separatist mentality and he left his own spiritual master, Kuresh. And he went and he became a minister in the kingdom of Chola, where a certain king was ruling. And his name was Kolatunga. So there was King Kolatunga and his minister was Chaturgram, who was a disciple of Kuresh. So Chaturgram poisoned the mind of Kolatunga. Kolatunga was a Shaivite. He was a worshipper of Lord Shiva. But he was very fanatic. And you know, people who have this fanatic streak, it takes very little to ignite them for all wrong causes. So Chaturgram poisoned the mind of Kolatunga and told him that, King, my dear king, you will have to convert into Vaishnavism. You will have to give up your worship of Shivji if you don't stop Ramanujacharya. Because Ramanujacharya is so powerful. He is such a powerful preacher and he's converting so many people into Vaishnavism that your entire kingdom is at a threat. Your entire Chola kingdom will be, dynasty will be, your whole kingdom will be converted into Vaishnavas, and you will also have to convert into Vaishnavism. So Kolapunga took the advice of his minister very seriously, especially knowing that previously he was one of the associates of Kuresh and Ramanujacharya. So he asked him, what should we do? So Chaturgram said, let us kill Ramanujacharya. There is no other way. Let us try to defeat him in arguments in our palace, in our court, and behind closed doors. Let's try to defeat him. If we defeat him, then we will publicize that we have defeated him. If we are not able to defeat him, then let's just kill him. So either he comes here, he gets defeated by our pandits, and Ramanujacharya converts into Shaivism, or he defeats us and we kill him off. We'll kill him. So let us invite him for a debate. Let's not reveal our plans to him, but let's just invite him for a debate. So Kolapunga asked him, where does Ramanujacharya live? Chaturgram said that he is based in Srirangam. That is the headquarters of Sri Vaishnavism. So Maharaj Kolapunga sent his messengers accompanied by some powerful soldiers, and they crossed the Kaveri and they went to the beautiful island temple of Srirangam. And the place where Sripada Ramanujacharya was staying, these messengers, accompanied by those powerful soldiers, they came and they conveyed the message that Sripada Ramanujacharya has been invited by King Kolapunga for a friendly debate, for a discussion. So normally, Ramanujacharya would have welcomed such an opportunity to go and preach and discuss philosophy. But Kuresh was there, and Kuresh immediately figured out that this is not what it seems. There is more to it than what meets the eye. Because he realized that his deviant disciple, Chaturgram, was now one of the main ministers in this kingdom. So he understood that something is wrong. They plan to destroy us. And he did not want to jeopardize the life of a spiritual master. So now see, in this story, we will repeatedly see that following the instructions of one's spiritual master is most important for all of us. So now, Kuresh wanted to save his spiritual master, Sripada Ramanujacharya. So what could he have done? Kuresh was a very prominent disciple. He was a pure devotee. He was so prominent that he had his own disciples. And he came from a royal family. He was Kuresh. He was the lord of the Kura province. He was the king. He had given up everything, and he and his wife had come to stay with Sripada Ramanujacharya. So he could have told Ramanujacharya that there is danger to your life. Let us send someone else as Ramanujacharya with these messengers and soldiers, and both of us, along with Mahapurna, let's escape from here. Let's disguise ourselves and let's escape. And there were so many loyal disciples who would have happily gone to save the life of Ramanujacharya. But no. Kuresh understood the heart of Sripada Ramanujacharya, and he told Ramanujacharya that there is danger. The intentions of this king, Kolapunga, are not very good. I know him because one of my deviant disciples has unfortunately joined him as his minister. So you please don't go. Let me go, impersonating as you. So please give me your sannyas address, and you wear my dress as a grihastha, my white dhoti and white chadar, and give me your sannyas dhoti and your sannyas chadar, saffron, so that I can go as you. Because so far, the messengers and the soldiers, they are waiting outside. They have not seen you. They don't know how you look. So let me go as you. So Ramanujacharya very strongly rejected this proposal. He said, this is something I cannot even consider, my dear Kuresh. How can I endanger your life? This is not possible. Whatever Sri Ranganath wants will happen to me. Rakhe Krishna mare ke, mare Krishna rakhe ke. I'm not worried. Let me go in the mood of serving Lord Narayan. And then whatever happens to me, happens. That is Krishna's will. But Kuresh, he falls at the lotus feet of Sripad Ramanujacharya. And with genuine tears of love and concern, he begs Sripad Ramanujacharya, I have never asked you for anything, my spiritual master. Please, if I have ever done anything to please you, if I have been a good disciple, then I ask just this one bhiksha from you, one request from you. I'm begging, please allow me to serve you by going as Ramanujacharya with these soldiers. Please let me go. And you immediately wear my white clothes and through the back door, accompanied by some trusted disciples, you please escape from here. Otherwise these soldiers are going to come looking for you. Please, that's all I'm asking. Please do this for me. Please do this for me. He would just not give up. He kept begging Sripad Ramanujacharya. And Sripad Ramanujacharya just could not refuse him. So against his own wishes, Sri Ramanujacharya, he took Kuresh's clothes and he gave his own clothes of a sannyasi to Kuresh. And Kuresh immediately dressed himself up as Ramanujacharya and accompanied by Mahapurna, who was very old at that time, he went with the messengers and the soldiers to the Chola kingdom. And Sripad Ramanujacharya escaped through the back door. When they went there, initially they were treated very nicely. They were given a warm welcome. They were given quarters to stay. And the king said, we are soon going to start a discussion, a debate. So I have some pandits in my kingdom who will debate with you. And then the debate started in the court of King Kolatunga. And obviously, Kuresh and Mahapurna being such learned Vaishnavas, they gave such convincing arguments, they gave such powerful evidence from all the revealed scriptures that they completely defeated all the arguments of the Shaivites. And after being thoroughly defeated, King Kolatunga still was not he was not at all convinced. And see, Chaturgram did not stay for the debate because he did not have the moral courage to stand before his Param Guru. So he was not there in the court when the debates took place. He carefully avoided them. But King Kolatunga, although his ministers, his pandits were defeated, he told Ramanujacharya, who actually was Kuresh, that you sign this patra that you have been defeated by my pandits and you agree that Lord Shiva is the supreme and Lord Vishnu is not the supreme. So Kuresh, who everybody thought was Ramanujacharya, he had just defeated all of them. And conclusively, based on scriptures, in a very gentleman way, he had defeated them in the debate. And when they were telling him to sign like this, falsify, give a false testimony, he jokingly wrote on that patra that even Drona is greater than Shiva. So in those days, there were different measurements, like we have gram, we have kilogram, we have pound, we have ounces. So just like we have ounce and we have pound. So they had Drona and they had Shiva. So Shiva was like ounce and Drona unit of measurement was like pounds. So just like 1 pound is greater than 1 ounce, similarly, you know, one Drona was greater than one Shiva. So jokingly, Kuresh wrote on that paper that even Drona is greater than Shiva. Just to, you know, reply them in the same language, because they were speaking a language of deceit and cheating. They had been defeated, but still they wanted him to write otherwise. So he also, in a very joking way, wrote like that. And then the king had already decided that even after the sign, he would, you know, finish them off. Otherwise, they will go and tell the truth to the whole world that they were forced to sign falsely, things like that. But anyway, as soon as this was over, King Kolatunga, he said that let us kill Ramanujacharya and his associate Mahapurna, who actually was one of the spiritual masters of Shripada Ramanujacharya. But Kolatunga's daughter was previously saved by Ramanujacharya when she was a little girl. She was attacked by evil spirit, a ghost. So she was saved by the chanting of the mantra Om Namo Narayanaya by Shripada Ramanujacharya. So she was greatly favored by Ramanujacharya. So she told the king that please don't kill him. Please don't kill him. You may punish him, but don't kill him. So then Kolatunga said, okay, just pluck out their eyes and make them blind and then leave them in the forest so that some tiger or leopard will eat them. And if they still survive, then it is their good luck. So then the soldiers took Mahapurna and Kuresh, who they thought was Ramanujacharya, deep in the forest. And they plucked out their eyes. They did not put hot iron rod or anything. They plucked out. It is so incredibly painful and torturous. They just plucked out their eyes and they left them in the forest. Now, there are different versions of this story. But even when they were doing it, Kuresh and Mahapurna, they were praying. They were praying for Chaturgram, they were praying for Maharaj Kolatunga, and they were praying for these executioners, these soldiers, that Lord Narayan, please bless them, please forgive them, please don't take any offense, please elevate them. So when these soldiers saw the merciful nature of these two personalities, they understood that these are not ordinary human beings. These are very, very divine sadhus, and we have committed a great apradh by torturing them like this and hurting them. So they find some local villagers or some tribal people there near the forest, and they tell that, please take care of them, guide them. And then the soldiers go away. Now, Mahapurna is very old and he could not bear the physical torture. And soon after the soldiers left, he placed his head on the lap of Kuresh. And remembering the lotus feet of his spiritual master, Shri Yamunacharya, and remembering the lotus feet of his disciple, Srila Ramanujacharya, who Mahapurna considered as his spiritual authority, Mahapurna went back to Vaikuntha. And then Kuresh was all alone. But Kuresh was feeling so happy that for the sake of my spiritual master, for the protection of Shripada Ramanujacharya, I was able to give my eyes. I paid the price of my spiritual master's safety with my two eyes. I am so fortunate. I am so fortunate. What is the loss? What would I have done with these eyes? Just seen different scenes of this material world. But look at what I have achieved. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, I have been able to serve my spiritual master in such an intimate way. Now my spiritual master can continue his preaching and he will give eyes of divine knowledge to the whole world. I lost my eyes, my mundane eyes, which were useless anyway. But this whole world will now, the world will gain the divine eyes of Vidya, of Jnan, knowledge, because of my spiritual master, Shripada Ramanujacharya. Om Adnyan Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya. He will give Jnan, he will give knowledge to the whole world now. And all, the only price, little price I had to pay was my two eyes. I'm so fortunate. Kuresh was feeling so happy. So see, Kuresh gave up the personal association of his spiritual master to serve his spiritual master. How wonderful it is. And Shripad Ramanujacharya, he stayed at different places. And after several years, finally they were reunited. And when they were reunited in Srirangam, Ramanujacharya was so ecstatic to see his disciple, his dear disciple Kuresh. Although he was extremely pained to see that he had become blind, but Shripada Ramanujacharya, he embraced Kuresh. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced his disciple Rupa Goswami, Shripada Ramanujacharya embraced Kuresh and he bathed him with his own tears of love. And what had happened was, after Kuresh and Mahapurna were tortured, Chaturgram, the minister, who was an ex-disciple of Kuresh, and the king Kolatunga, they both contracted very severe diseases and they died. First, Chaturgram died, the minister, a very painful death. And Kolatunga got a big abscess in his neck. And he called so many vaidyas to treat him, but the infection never came under control. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And in few days, he succumbed. After suffering a lot of pain, the king died. And then his son was made the next king of the Chola dynasty. So back in Srirangam, now some biographers say that this happened in the temple of Lord Varadraj, but some say that it happened in Srirangam. Prithivila Sanadri, do you know where Kuresh went and prayed? Was it Varadraj?
Or Varadraj.
It was Varadraj?
Yes,
okay, okay. Okay, okay. So, Shripad Ramanujacharya, he requested Kuresh that, you know, you are such a pure devotee that when you sing for the pleasure of Lord Varadraj and when you offer your prayers, he is so pleased. So, Ramanujacharya actually prayed to Lord Varadraj that when Kuresh comes and sings bhajans for you, then at the end of the day, you please offer him a benediction. Please offer him a benediction. And I will ask him to request you for his eyes. So please fulfill his desire. And then Shripada Ramanujacharya, he told Kuresh that please go to Lord Varadraj and please sing. Whole day you sing for his pleasure. You sing bhajans for the pleasure of Lord Varadraj. And at the end of the day, if Lord Varadraj asks you for a benediction, then my dear Kuresh, please ask for your eyes back. Please tell Varadraj that I have lost two precious properties of my spiritual master. Please give them back to me. You pray like this and Lord Varadraj will understand what you're talking about. What are those two precious properties of Ramanujacharya which you have lost? And he will give them back to you. He will give you your eyes back. Please go and please pray. Following the instructions of his spiritual master, the blind Kuresh goes in front of Lord Varadaraj. And whole day he is doing beautiful kirtan. He is singing beautiful prayers in glorification of the Lord. And sure enough, in the evening, Lord Varadaraj, who bestows wonderful and amazing benedictions upon his devotees, asked Kuresh, "My dear Kuresh, I am so pleased with your kirtan. Please ask me for any benediction." Kuresh, with great humility and compassion, he carefully analyzes what he should do. Now, this is very important for all of us. Just see, his spiritual master has directly instructed him to ask for his eyes back. And what does Kuresh do? Kuresh prays to Shri Varadaraj that actually I do not want anything, but because you are offering a benediction, and because my spiritual master Shripad Ramanujacharya wants me to ask for a benediction, I will ask. If it pleases you, Shri Varadaraj, please fulfill my prayer that my deviant disciple who left me, his name is Chaturgram, I know right now he is suffering miserably in hell. Please, my dear Varadaraj, if you so desire, please, I beg you, immediately forgive Chaturgram. Completely purify his heart and right now give him liberation in Vaikuntha as your eternal servant. Now, Varadaraj was I don't know what Lord Varadaraj felt when he heard this. But he must have felt great ecstasy. So Lord Varadaraj said, "I don't want to do this. But because you are asking for it, your deviant disciple, Chaturgram, is already liberated and right now he is in Vaikuntha with me, completely purified." Kuresh becomes very happy and he comes out of the temple. And all day when Kuresh was praying to Varadaraj, Ramanujacharya also was praying that, "Please, Lord, please restore his vision. Please restore his eyes." And as soon as Kuresh came out, Shripada Ramanujacharya went to him and asked him, "Please, tell me, what happened? Did Varadaraj ask you for benediction? Did you ask for your eyes? What happened? Why are your eyes still not there? What's wrong? What happened? Tell me." And Kuresh replied very humbly that, "My dear spiritual master, because you had blessed me, Varadaraj asked me for a benediction. He offered me a benediction. And I asked that my deviant disciple, Chaturgram, should get moksha in Vaikuntha. And he should be forgiven of all his apradhas. So he is liberated now. Chaturgram is liberated. He is in Vaikuntha. And Kuresha was genuinely happy. Ramanujacharya, he told Kuresh that, please, tomorrow, again go in front of Varadraj. And whole day, please do kirtan for his pleasure. Please sing for his pleasure. And at the end of the day, Lord Varadraj will ask you for a benediction. Offer your benediction. This time, please don't disobey me. Please ask for your eyes back. Tell Lord Varadraj that my eyes were the precious property of my Guru Maharaj, Shripada Ramanujacharya. And he wants me to ask them back from you. Please ask for your eyes. So Kuresh says, yes, my Lord. And next day, again, Kuresh goes and whole day he sings for the pleasure of Lord Varadraj. And at the end of the day, the bestower of wonderful benedictions, Sri Varadraj, speaks to Kuresh and tells him, my dear Kuresh, I am very pleased with your kirtan. Thank you so much. It is my desire to give you a benediction. Please ask me for anything. I will fulfill it. And just remember that your spiritual master wants you to ask for your eyes. Varadraj prompts him. And Kuresh, from the core of his heart, understanding the deeper intentions, understanding the heart of Ramanujacharya as well as Lord Varadraj, Kuresh speaks. He says, my dear Lord, if you so desire to offer me a benediction, then please give me this one benediction. That King Kolatunga, he suffered miserably and he died a painful death. And right now I know he is suffering tremendously in hell. I beg you, please immediately forgive him, purify him, and take him to Vaikuntha as a eternally liberated servant of yours. Please give him moksha in Vaikuntha right now. And Varadraj, with great ecstasy, spoke that, my dear Kuresh, I did not want to do it. But because you have spoken like this, the evil King Kolatunga has been already delivered from hellish suffering. And right now, he is completely liberated and he is living in Vaikuntha with me. So Kuresh was so blissful. He came out very happy. And again, Shripad Ramanujacharya was eagerly waiting. And he went to him and he asked him, my dear Kuresh, you're looking so happy. You're looking so blissful. But I don't see your eyes. You still don't have your eyes. Tell me what happened. And Kuresh explains that, Gurudev, because you had blessed me, Lord Varadraj offered me benediction. And I asked him, I requested him, I begged him to release King Kolatunga from hellish suffering and give him liberation. And Kolatunga is now in Vaikuntha Dham. Forever, he is released from material suffering. So Ramanujacharya again, he requests Kuresh that tomorrow again, please go before Lord Varadraj and all day do kirtan, sing bhajans. And at the end of the day, if Lord Varadraj asks you for a benediction, then please, 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 third time don't disobey me. Please ask for your vision. Please ask for your vision. And Kuresh says, Yes, my lord. And next day again, Kuresh goes in front of Lord Varadaraj. And he's singing bhajan and kirtan all day with great love. That is what devotees like to do. They just like to be in association of each other and glorify Krishna and his devotees. So Kuresh did just that. And Lord Varadaraj was so happy, so pleased with him. At the end of the day, at the end of the third day, again he asked Kuresh, "My dear Kuresh, please ask for any benediction. And please don't forget that your spiritual master Srila Ramanujacharya wants you to ask for your vision back. And I also, the Lord of your life, I also greatly desire to give you your eyes back. So please ask." This time, Kuresh had no choice. So he prayed to Lord Varadaraj and said, "My dear Lord, if you really want to give me this last benediction, then for your pleasure and for the pleasure of my spiritual master, Sri Ramanujacharya, I beg you for this last benediction." Always, constantly, give me the ability to see your beautiful form as the Lord of my life and the beautiful form of my eternal spiritual master, Sripada Ramanujacharya, in the core of my heart. I want to see both of you in my heart at all times. I do not wish to see anything of this material world. I do not want my material eyes back. But if you so desire, in the heart of my hearts, I always want to behold your beautiful form and the merciful form of Sripada Ramanujacharya, my Gurudev. And Srila Varadaraj, completely overcome by the pure devotion of this exalted devotee Kuresh, could not speak anything other than Tathastu. So be it. What can the Lord say? What can the Lord say? Aham bhakta paradhino hiya svatantra evadvija sadhu bhir grasta rudayo bhakta er bhakta janapriya. When Kuresh came out that evening, Sripada Ramanujacharya asked him, "Please tell me, Kuresh, what happened? I still don't see eyes. Please tell me what happened." And Kuresh said, "This time, Guru Maharaj, I followed your instructions and I have asked that my vision be restored." And then he told Ramanujacharya, "With my vision, all I want to see is the Lord and my Guru Maharaj. I do not wish to see anything of this material world. And Varadaraj has mercifully fulfilled my desire." So to satisfy all the devotees, Sripada Ramanujacharya asks Kuresh, "So tell me, Kuresh, what dress is Lord Varadaraj wearing?" And Kuresh very beautifully in great details described the beautiful garments that Varadaraj was wearing that day. Then Ramanujacharya said, "Tell me right now the beauty, describe to me the beauty of Varadaraj." So starting from his lotus feet, Kuresh in great detail described exactly how many tulasi leaves were offered at the lotus feet of Varadaraj, how his garlands were, how his jewels were, and how beautiful he was looking everything Kuresh described perfectly. Then Ramanujacharya asked him, tell me how I am standing, what I am doing right now. And Kuresh, again, for the satisfaction of all the devotees, he spoke, my dear Gurudev, you are standing like this. Today your dhoti is like this. Your tilak is like this. And you are smiling at me. When the devotees saw that Kuresh had received this divine vision that he can at all times behold the beautiful form of his Guru and Krishna, they were all so happy for him. So happy for him. And how much appreciation Shripad Ramanujacharya had for Kuresh, that is seen what happens after this. Because soon after this, Kuresh realized that Shripad Ramanujacharya is going to wind up his earthly pastime soon. And Kuresh did not wish to see the disappearance leela of Shripad Ramanujacharya, which happened last week on Friday. So Kuresh prayed to Lord Varadraj that please take me. My time has come. I want to leave my body. So Lord Varadraj again offered him a benediction. He said, please ask me for any benediction. So Kuresh said, if you want to offer me a benediction, my Lord, I don't want any benediction, but if you really want to offer me, then please let me beg you for this benediction. That anyone who is close to me, please, at the end of their life, bring them to Vaikuntha. Purify them and give them liberation in Vaikuntha. When this news reached Shripad Ramanujacharya that Kuresh is going to quit his body very soon, to the surprise of all the devotees, Shripad Ramanujacharya took his bahir vastra, his outer garment, started waving it in the air, started jumping up and down, and started singing and dancing in great joy. I will also go, I will also go, I will also go. All the devotees were surprised to see the reaction of Shripad Ramanujacharya. His beloved disciple was about to die and he is dancing happily. So they asked him, can you please explain? And Shripad Ramanujacharya explained that did you not hear what Kuresh prayed? He prayed that anyone who is close to me should get liberation and should go to Vaikuntha. Now he is my disciple. So naturally I am close to him. Now because of Kuresh, when I give up my body, I will also get to go to Vaikuntha. We will all get to go to Vaikuntha. That's why I am so happy, I am dancing. So this shows how much appreciation Shripad Ramanujacharya had for Kuresh and how much humility he had. Shripad Ramanujacharya is no ordinary Jivatma. He is an incarnation of Lakshman. He is Ananta Shesh. And he is having such humility that I will go to Vaikuntha because of my disciple Kuresh. Such is the loving relationship between a disciple and a guru. Therefore, it is very essential that we serve the instructions of the guru instead of wanting to just be in the physical presence of the guru. So one may question, why did Kuresh ask for benedictions which were completely different from what Ramanujacharya had instructed him to ask? The answer is very simple. Because Kuresh understood the heart of Ramanujacharya. You see, when Ramanujacharya got Om Namo Narayanaya mantra from one of his early gurus, Goshtipurna. Was it Goshtipurna, Prithvi Vilas Srinivasa?
Say that again, Prabhu. I missed it.
Was it Goshtipurna who gave the mantra Om Namo Narayanaya?
Yes.
So when Ramanacharya got that mantra from Goshtipurna, Om Namo Narayanaya, which was supposed to be a secret mantra, Ramanacharya went to a Vishnu temple and invited the whole village and gave them that mantra. You chant this mantra and you go to Vaikuntha. I will go to hell. I will suffer in hell on your behalf. Even if by giving this mantra, I commit Guru Aparadh, I commit Nam Aparadh, I will go to the hellish planets and suffer there forever. But all of you, in return, in exchange for my suffering, will be able to go to Vaikuntha. So it is definitely worth it. And he did that. So Kuresh understood the merciful nature of his Guru. Although externally Ramanacharya was saying, ask for your eyes back, Kuresh knew what will genuinely please Ramanujacharya, what will genuinely set the right example for all time to come, for all Vaishnavas. So Kuresh did not disobey Ramanujacharya. Rather, he obeyed the deepest instructions of his Guru. Jive doya Krishna naam sarva dharma saar. Nadiya Godrume Nityananda Mahajan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught us. So same principle we see in the life of Narottam Das Thakur also. Narottam Das Thakur was blissfully living in the association of his spiritual master, Srila Loknath Goswami, and his Shiksha Guru, Srila Jiva Goswami, in the association of his beloved friends, Srinivas Acharya, Shamananda Pandit, Ramchandra Kaviraj, in the holy land of Vrindavan. But when his spiritual master, Srila Loknath Goswami, and his Shiksha Guru, Srila Jiva Goswami, instructed the three of them, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, and Shamananda Pandit, to go to Bengal and Orissa and preach Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they did not stay back in the physical association of their gurus. Srinivas Acharya was a disciple of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Shamananda Pandit was a disciple of Hruday Chaitanya. His name was Dukhi Krishna Das. Then Jiva Goswami gave him the name Shamananda Pandit. So Dukhi Krishna Das was a disciple of Hruday Chaitanya. Gopal Bhatta Goswami's disciple was Srinivas Acharya. And Loknath Goswami's disciple was Narottam Das Thakur. But all three of them accepted Jiva Goswami as their Shiksha Guru. And they were living happily together. Lot of things for us to learn. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shamananda Pandit were intimate friends. But they were disciples of different gurus. But they did not fight that my guru is better than your guru, therefore I am better than you. So it is possible for us to coexist and thrive and flourish and do our seva together in cooperation, even though we may have different gurus. If we have Krishna in the center, if we have our own agendas in the center of our life, then we will find many differences, many reasons to fight with each other. But if we have the message of Guru and Gauranga in the center of our life, then there will be harmony and there will be cooperation, which is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Shamananda Pandit, they also left Vrindavan and they traveled and preached. They served the instructions of their spiritual master rather than just staying in the physical presence of their spiritual master. Same thing we see with our Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada could have stayed in the association of Vaishnavas, in Radha Damodar temple, in Seva Kunj, in Vrindavan, right next to the Samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami, right next to the worshipable deities of Srila Jiva Goswami, which is Srila Radha Damodar Bhagwan. Wonderful. He could have lived there peacefully. But serving the instructions of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was most important to him. So he gave up all association of all the devotees. Can you imagine when Srila Prabhupada came to America, he had no devotee association. When we get a job offer, we always say, oh, is there some temple there? Are there devotees in this city? Is there some Bhakti Vruksha happening? Otherwise, I don't want to go. Which is good. For our level, that is good. But just see Srila Prabhupada. And we, even if we are in a city where there are no devotees, we can log into ISKCON Desire Tree and, you know, we can hear so many lectures online. We can subscribe to so many YouTube channels of so many great devotees and stay connected. We can visit their Facebook page and read their lecture transcripts, you know, watch them, hear kirtan. We can be in devotee association even in a city where there is no association through the medium of communication and technology. But during Srila Prabhupada's time, when he came to America, he was giving up all devotee association. There were no devotees. He could not be in touch. Nothing, no internet. He gave up all devotee association and came from Vrindavan to Lower East Side of Manhattan. He gave up his room in Radha Damodar Temple. He gave up everything. Why? Because being in physical presence of Guru and Krishna was not as important as serving the instructions of the spiritual master. And that is exactly what Srila Rupa Goswami is being taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And because Srila Prabhupada did this in an exemplary way, Srila Prabhupada is the foremost among the followers of Shri Rupa and Raghunath Goswami. Therefore we say, Gauravani Pracharine. Srila Prabhupada not only preached Gauravani, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he lived the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he exemplified the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his own life, by his own example and conduct. Therefore he is Acharya. He is not only the founder, but he is the Acharya for us. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. These are just some thoughts. So the time is up. I am very grateful for your association. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrit ki jai. Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj ki jai. Anant Koti Vaishnava Vrind ki jai. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu and Lord Pranam. Go ahead, Mataji. Hare Krishna Prabhu and Lord Pranam. Sangari Krishna. Very, very, very beautiful message and very beautiful narration, very beautiful class. It was heart melting. Especially, I think, when you said the reaction of Varadaraj. And Varadaraj, he was very happy. And then, I mean, the way you said it, it was really, really, like how Parikshari Mataji says sometimes, your heart stops. So my heart really stopped. Thank you so much for such a beautiful class. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Adigadadadas Prabhu, Hunted and Pranam, all the Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev, Jai Shri Radheshyam. It reminds me, Maharaj used to be on a class of, I forgot the Prabhuji's name, and Prabhuji, thank you very much for explaining such a nice way the Kurusi story.
Thank you, Mataji, Vrinda Gopika Mataji. We have been missing you. Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Very nice class. Very nice description of the association, or what do you call, between Brahmanujacharya and Kuresh and Varadaraj. It's very nice, wonderful. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Dandavat Pranam. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Prabhuji, we are not taking breath. Attentively attend your class.
Thank you, Mataji. Is Kamodaki Mataji on the call?
Yes, Prabhuji, this is she. Hare Krishna. Very
Hare
nice.
Krishna, Mataji. Thank you, Mataji. Mataji, last time you were wanting to say something, and was it you?
Yes, yes. Yes, I wanted to ask you, but then I forgot. So then I was thinking, then I said, well, maybe next time when I remembered, I will not call you and let you know.
Sure,
or ask
sure, question. Sure.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much. All of you. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I think Gaurangi Mataji also had a question last time, but we had to...
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Mataji. Yes, I also had... Thank you so much for remembering. Yes, in the last class, you mentioned the heart as well as the mind. And it seems like many times we conflate the two when we are talking about them. And so I was wondering if you could distinguish between when this, you know, Shastras refer to the mind, when it refers to the heart. Sometimes it seems the same, sometimes not.
Yes, Mataji. So our body, our physical body, is like the hardware. And mind, intelligence, and false ego is like the software. And the soul is even subtler than software, because software can get corrupted, software can get a virus, but the soul cannot be cut, does not die. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin, na hanyate hannamane sharire. So, like that. Now, when we say, Ishvara Sarva Bhutana Amrita Deshi Arjuna Tishtati, that the Lord is in the region of the heart in all living entities, and the Lord as a super soul is sitting with the Jivatma, the soul. So the soul is in the region of the heart, is in the region of the chest. The soul is accompanied by the super soul, Paramatma. And as we know that the subtle body covers the soul, therefore, I said that mind is in the heart, is situated in the region of the heart, the physical heart. Mind, intelligence, and false ego are the three coverings of the subtle body that the soul has. And over that is the covering of the gross body, the physical body. Now, when we say in the scriptures that Krishna reveals knowledge in the heart, Tene Brahma Hridaye, Adikavaya, that, you know, knowledge was revealed in the heart of Brahmaji. So that is a very how do I put it? It is not to do with the hardware. That heart is not to do with the hardware, but it is the consciousness which manifests through the mind, intelligence, and false ego. So, whatever the consciousness is there, which is a symptom of the presence of soul, that consciousness, where the consciousness comes from, that is what we refer to as when we say that it was revealed in my heart. At the same time, when Krishna is saying that Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridayeshu Arjuna Tishtati, at that time, Hridayesha means the region of the heart, that we are referring to the chest area or the physical body. That's where the soul lives. Therefore, when we even see the paintings in Bhagavad Gita, the soul is depicted in the region of the heart. Now, there are some organisms which don't have a physical heart like we do, like microbes. So this is just for our understanding for human beings. Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjun, who was a human being. For human beings, it's there in the heart. Then one may say that, but people get a cardiac transplant, they get a heart transplant. So then what happens? So again, we have to understand that the soul, you know, is very subtle. It is much more powerful than the physical body. The physical body has limitations, but the soul does not have limitations like the physical body. So yes, the soul is in the region of the heart, but when they remove the old failing heart and they transplant with a new heart, the soul is still there in the body as long as the patient is alive. So it's in the region of the heart, but it doesn't mean that if the heart is physically removed, then the soul also has to follow the heart. It is not like that. The soul is not limited like the physical gross body is limited. For example, if my heart is taken out from my body and put on a table, then, you know, my heart is being gross and physical, it is limited in space and time. So if it's on the table, it's not in my body. But as far as the soul is concerned, the soul does not need the heart as such. It can still stay somewhere in the chest, and then they put a new heart. So the soul is still in the body. Does that even make sense, Mataji, what I'm talking?
Well, it's just I've understood that once the body becomes very non-functional, let's say, then the soul cannot remain there. And so
correct.
It seems, as in the example of a heart transplant situation, you know, it seems like how less functional than that can the body become? Yet you're saying that the soul can remain under such a situation.
Right. So the soul is situated in the region of the heart, but that doesn't mean that it is completely bound to the heart, and if the heart is removed, then the soul also has to quit the body. That we clearly know is, you know, not the case, because people get heart transplant and they live for years after that sometimes. So even if you get a heart transplant, your heart is failing and you have end-stage congestive heart failure, and you're getting a cardiac, and a patient is getting a cardiac transplant, then once the transplant is done, if the patient makes it, if the body is still functional, then the soul can continue to live in the body. So all patients who are undergoing heart transplant are not in a position that the body is no longer usable by the soul.
It just seems that if in the case where the heart is no longer functional, it makes me wonder,
right,
under what situations would the body be totally inhospitable for a soul? If not in such a case, then in what case would a soul absolutely just not be able to remain in the body?
When the heart is not functioning, when there is no, when the function of the heart is not being performed, then the body becomes uninhabitable. So if a patient gets a massive heart attack, then, and the heart stops, then the body becomes uninhabitable. Now there are some people who have an external heart, which means their biological heart is not working, so they wear an external pump, which is pumping their blood. So the function of the heart is still being done. So the body is still inhabitable. It is not uninhabitable. It is still usable. On the other hand, if a patient has a brain tumor or some lung cancer or something else which causes the body to collapse and fail, and ultimately the heart stops, and the function of the heart stops, there is no blood circulating, then the body is useless and the soul leaves. Also, it is said that the time of death of every body that takes birth is fixed by the devatas. So every human being who takes birth, his or her time of death, the time of expiration of the body, is the expiry date is fixed. So when we commit suicide, we are doing it before the destined time of death. So whatever time is left, for example, if a person is supposed to live for 50 years, and at the age of 25, he commits suicide. So the next body for that soul was going to become available through the agency of material nature in 25 years from now. But because he prematurely destroyed his body against the plan of nature, then for 25 years, he may have to live in the subtle body, the ghost. He may have to become a ghost. And then after 25 years, when his original body was supposed to have actually died, then he will get a new body based on his karma.
Actually, there's two things about that. One is, I'm surprised to hear that, you know, it's actually possible to defy our karma by doing something like suicide. I would have thought that that suicide was included within his karma. You know, in other words,
no.
I didn't think it would be possible to adjust your date of death. If you're born with a particular expiration date, I didn't
right.
think it was possible to actually defy that. And the other thing is, my understanding that when you do commit suicide, you know, it wouldn't just be the amount of time you would have had remaining. I thought that it was like really many, 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 you know, almost incalculable years that you're forced to remain as a ghost body because of that sin.
Mataji, it is possible for us to end our life before the predestined time. That's where the free will comes in. That's why if somebody murders somebody, that person was not supposed to die, but somebody is murdered, then therefore you get a sin because you took away the life before it was destined to end. And same with suicide. Someone may commit suicide and that was not the, that may not be the right time for the person to die.
You see, that's the thing. I thought the karma, I thought our karma was pretty much, aside from if we take to devotional service, I thought as long as we're not taking to devotional service, I thought that our karma was pretty much set in stone.
So yes, Mataji, our karma is set in stone, but it is not black and white. So see, let me explain this. It is not black and white. So what we feel for our simplistic understanding that, okay, whatever happens is, you know, predestined. But if that was true, then where does free will come in? For example, if I take a gun, I go to the forest and I shoot a deer. So one way of looking at it is that, okay, that deer was supposed to die. Maybe it was supposed to die. But how can you or me know that? Therefore, law of karma is not something we can understand. We can understand the principles, but we can never, no human being can ever understand the details. For example, some man goes into an elementary school in Connecticut and shoots 24 elementary school kids. So one may say, okay, all those kids were destined to die. But how do we know? We cannot know. That's where the free will comes in, that person, the shooter, misused his free will and caused untimely death of so many people, so many kids. So it may be predestined, it may not be. Our free will also plays into it. And therefore, law of karma is very subtle. It is not at all black and white. For our simplistic understanding, we try to oversimplify it, but we cannot oversimplify. Law of karma is extremely complex. Extremely complex. Nobody can understand it. And therefore, we should focus on what our dharma is instead of trying to analyze the karma. Because karma can have multiple layers to it, multiple dimensions to it. There are so many births, karma, which is playing out. And there is interplay. And then on top of that, there is free will. Not only my free will, your free will of so many people. And it's all interacting together. That's why we need devatas who have been empowered by Krishna to keep a track of all this karma.
Well,
so there is free
asked,
will. Yeah.
You asked where does free will come into, like, say, where that man shot all those people. So I would have said that, you know, the free will was his decision to take up the gun and shoot. But it was the karma of those people who got shot. You know, in other words, if you have if you have a choice, then free will is there. The man had a choice to pick up the gun or not pick up the gun. But
getting
shot,
let me ask you.
You're getting shot, right. You don't have choice. So in that case, if you don't have choice, then to me that's how I understand karma. When, you know, like this.
So let me ask you one question, Gaurangi Mataji. So that person picked up the gun, that is his free choice. You agree?
Yes.
And those kids who got shot and killed, unfortunately, it
mm-hmm.
was their karma, right?
Mm. Yes.
So why should the man get sins? You see?
He got sin. It's his sin because of how he misused his free will.
No, but I may pick up a gun and not kill anybody. I will not get sin. But that person is getting sin because he is killing those 24 children. Is it not? But
yes.
If we say that the 24 children were destined to die anyway, whether he would have picked up the gun or not, so then why does he get sin?
Because even though they were destined to be killed, it was his choice to, let's say, be the instrument of that karma.
So then why should he get sins?
Because
he's just an instrument.
Because he, of his free will, decided to do the killing. Even though it was the kid's karma, it was his decision. And let's say Krishna utilized the way he used his free will as an instrument to execute the kid's karma.
So that is exactly what I'm saying. If the kids were destined to die, then why should this man, who is just an instrument, be penalized for it? So let me give
you... Because, again, even though he's instrument, but Krishna utilizes the way people utilize their own free will to deliver other people's karma.
Okay. So I'll give you two examples. Before the Kurukshetra war starts, what does Krishna say? He names certain warriors. He says, I have already killed Jayadrath, I have already killed Karna, I have already killed Dronacharya, and I have already killed Bhishmadev. He takes the names of these warriors. And he says, and then when he shows the Virat Roop, Arjun sees that all the warriors, even some on the Pandava side, some on the Kaurava side, many of them are entering and they're all been destroyed. And Krishna says, I have already put them to death, you just become my instrument. Nimittamatra bhava savyasachin. He says, you savyasachin, just become an instrument. Okay? So that is, they were already predestined to die on the battlefield.
Yes, but in this
by
case,
Krishna's arrangement.
Arjuna would not get sin because he is being Krishna's instrument with a favorable mood. He wants to do what Krishna wants. In the case of the guy who killed those kids, he did it for selfish purposes. So whether a person is an instrument, what determines sin is whether you're being an instrument in favorable mood because you want to please Krishna, or not. When you're not trying to do so in a favorable mood, then it becomes sin. Like if Arjuna were to fight for his own selfish reasons, then even though those same people would have been killed, that he would have incurred sin for that.
Right. So, Mataji, there are two things. One is destiny, and one is free will. Okay? So there is destiny and free will, both real. Our destiny is also real, and our free will also real. Let me give you another example. When... there was a sadhu, I think his name was Manduk Muni, and some thieves came and they put some jewels in his hermitage, and they were caught by the king's soldiers. So the suspicion went that this sadhu has stolen because it was found on his property. So he was the punishment was given that he should be killed by being pierced with a spear. So this Manduk Muni was very powerful, and he questioned the king that, what is this? And he actually goes to Yamraj, and he questions Yamraj.
So Yamaraj says, oh, when you were small, you had pierced an insect with a needle, and that insect has appealed that unnecessarily I was killed by this boy, so therefore he should also be killed. So you are getting reaction for that. So then he says that, oh, you know, why should I get reaction when I was a child? And he curses Yamaraj that he will be born as a Shudra, as Vidur. So you see, that insect felt that he was not destined to be punished like that, or tortured like that by that young boy. But he was, and therefore the soul of that insect appealed that this sadhu should be, that boy who later on became a sadhu, Manduk Muni, should be punished. Now another thing, in Mahabharata, Dhritarashtra asks Krishna that why did I have to see the death of my 100 sons? And there also he says that, you know, in the 50 births ago, you were a hunter, and you were hunting for birds, and then you wanted to kill a bird, but the bird flew away, so you got irritated, and you just set fire to that tree where the bird had nests, and there were like total 100 eggs in that tree, and all the eggs got burnt, and therefore you had to suffer. Though, you know, you also had to go through that same pain which the birds went through when the birds saw their eggs getting burnt. So like that, we have free will and there is destiny. There is destiny also and there is free will also, and both are interplaying with each other. So if everything was predestined, Mataji, then, you know, what is the point of giving
reaction? No, I never said that everything was predestined. I believe that there is free will also. Like in the case with Dhritarashtra, because of how he used his free will, then the karma was there.
Yeah, but his free will was followed by action. For example, I may have a sinful thought, a sinful will to do something, but in Kali Yuga, if I don't accomplish it, like I may have a free will to eat non-veg, and I may go to a restaurant to eat non-veg, but there is no meat. The restaurant is closed, and I come home and I just, you know, don't do it. So because I did not eat meat, I should not get punishment for that. Although I had a free will to do it, because my free will was not followed by action. So, you know, unless we... So there is free will, yes, but there is karma also. With our free will, we have some capacity to influence certain things in this world. We may cause the untimely death of somebody. Therefore, it is said, if you kill an animal for meat, you have to be born and that animal will kill you again in the next life. So why is that? If that animal was destined to die, then why should I have to take a birth and why should that animal kill me in my next life?
Because sin, my understanding is that sin is determined not by the action alone, it's by the consciousness with which you carry out your free will. If by your free will you have a mood of selfishness, you're doing it for your own selfish purposes, then you incur sin. But if by that same free will you're trying to carry out the Lord's service, then even if it's the same action, then you don't incur sin because of the consciousness, not because of the action itself.
Right. So what you're talking about is a karma.
Yes.
And what I was talking about is vikarma.
Yes. And the difference between the two is consciousness. Are you trying to serve yourself or are you trying to serve Krishna?
Correct. That is true, Mataji. But what I'm saying is, with our free will, we do have the capacity as a jivatma to do harm to others. And every harm we do to others is not the sufferer's destiny. Otherwise, if destiny is everything, then what is the meaning of free will? And this is basically, I'm just repeating the words. I was hearing one series of lectures on why bad things happen to good people by Shubhavilas Prabhu, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu, and other speakers. And there, whatever I told you, like if somebody is destined to die at the age of 50 and commits suicide at 25, then for 25 years, he may have to live in a subtle body without a gross body as a ghost.
This is coming from Chaitanya Charan Prabhu's talk on this. So we do have, see Mataji, if everything, all the sufferings that we cause others was their destiny, or everything was, you know, all that suffering was predestined that we have the ability to cause unto others, then where does free will come into picture?
Again, both, I'm saying that the way, how free will comes in is how you decide what your course of action is, something that is not imposed upon you. I'm not saying that everything is destiny. I'm saying there's what happens to you by no choice of yours, that's your destiny. But what you choose to do, that is free will. So both are existing in any situation. You have your free will and your destiny. I'm not saying that everything is destiny. I'm saying some things are your free will. You choose to pick up a gun, but you don't choose to get shot. Choosing to pick up the gun is your free will. Getting shot is your destiny.
Okay, so let me ask you one question. So Dushasan, he attacked and assaulted Draupadi Devi. So was it Draupadi Devi's karma that she had to be humiliated like that?
Well, in her case, you know, it's a little gray because we're talking about a pure devotee. But in ordinary situations, I would say yes, it was her karma.
Okay, now Nalakuvar's wife is Ramba in the heavenly planets. Ravan raped her. Was it Ramba's destiny to be raped by Ravan?
Well, that story I've never heard. I'm reluctant to comment on something I've never heard.
Right. So Ravan, you know, he broke all the regulative principles. He used to drink the blood of Brahmanas. You know, he. So what I'm saying, Mataji, is with our free will, we can do harm to others, which was not necessarily their destiny.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is the meaning of free will. Because if with my free will I can do nothing more than what is predestined on others, then what is the meaning to my free will?
The meaning is the consciousness. The reason, even though it's the person's destiny, is because of the consciousness with which you exercise your free will. That, to me, is the difference between sin and not sin. You get sin because your consciousness was not consciously favorable towards serving Krishna.
That is
true. You use your free will to ignore Krishna's desire and just act for your own mind. Then that's when you incur sin, as I understand it.
Yeah, I think I'm not able to express myself properly, Mataji.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm understanding what you're trying to say, and I agree with you to the point. But what I want to say is, with our free will, we do have the power to harm others. We cannot think that, whatever harm happened, there was this terrorist attack and whatever people died, it was their destiny. No, that is actually that is not what the acharyas teach. With our free, using our free will, we can do damage, we can harm the bodies of others, which they were otherwise not destined to. That free will, that power is there with the individual soul, and for that misuse, we get karma, we get punishment, we get sinful reactions.
Okay.
So my only point is that we should not think that a particular shooter went to a school and shot, you know, 24 kids. It was the karma of those kids to die. That's why they died. That is too simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work like that. Like you said, it is gray. So there are a lot of things which are gray. There is free will and there is karma, and both are true, and they interact with each other. And therefore, it's very difficult to understand the law of karma. And it's not just one lifetime. It's millions of lifetimes. So our attitude should never be that, okay, these people died, so it's, you know, unfortunately, it was their karma.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, but it was their karma. That is a very harmful philosophy. So our attitude should be that it could have been their karma, but it is not for me to judge whether it was their karma or not. That only Krishna can judge. If we think that it was their karma, and I know it was their karma, then we are taking the position of the Paramatma. Because only Paramatma knows what is karma and what is assault, what is harm.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Mother. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for hanging in there with me.
I'm sorry for not being able to.
No. I mean, I do hear your point, you know, which I hadn't heard before, that, you know, when something happens to somebody, it's not necessarily their karma, even though they did not have any choice in the matter. You know, the fact that they did not have any choice in the matter doesn't mean that it was their karma. It sounds like that's what you were saying.
Yeah, right. For example, when Ravan attacks Satyavati, who was an ascetic lady sitting in the Himalayas, praying and meditating so that Lord Vishnu will accept her as his wife. And Ravan became lusty when he saw and he attacked. And then, you know, she gave up her body because she was touched by Ravan. She, by her yogic power, she had her body consumed in fire. And she gave up her body. And then in the next birth, she was born as Sita, Maya Sita, the Sita who was exchanged when Lord Ramchandra went after Marich deer. So she came and, you know, she became the cause of Ravan's death.
Yeah, see, in past times that involves the Lord's devotees, you know, I would put those things in a different category.
So yeah. Two things, Mataji, here. Two things are regarding, again, this is a little dangerous philosophy. One, everybody is a devotee of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
This point has to be understood. Everybody is a devotee of Krishna. So we cannot say that, oh, you know, this is devotee of Krishna, this doesn't apply. No, everybody is a devotee of Krishna. Jivera Swarup hai Krishna ra Nitya Das. Everybody is a devotee of Krishna. And number two, yes, there are certain things in the scriptures which we can say that, oh, these are, you know, pure devotees and, you know, this is an exception. But everything in the scriptures is not an exception. Otherwise, what is the relevance of scriptures in our life? There are stories in the scriptures so that we can practically apply those things in our life. From this particular pastime, we cannot say that Satyavati died in fire because it was her karma. No, Satyavati was abused, or there was an attempt to abuse her by Ravan, and therefore Ravan suffered in the future because she came as Maya Sita, and she became the cause of Ravan's death. So with Ravan's misuse of free will, he was able to harm Satyavati in that life. And therefore, in the next life of Satyavati, the karma came back to Ravan. So there's two things. One is, you know, yes, scriptures, there are exceptions sometimes. Things that, you know, which you know, are completely exceptional. Like Narottam Das Thakur giving up his body while getting abhishek of milk and his body just melting into milk. Yes, that is exception. But on the other hand, scriptures, the exceptions are unusual. They're uncommon, even in the scriptures. But generally, the scriptures are there to give us examples of lessons that we can apply in our practical life. So here, with Satyavati, we cannot say that, that is just in the scriptures, it's Leela, it's pure devotees, it doesn't apply to us. No. It's a clear example that Ravan harmed her by misusing his free will, and as a reaction, he had to be killed in the next when she came in her next life as Maya Sita. And everybody is a devotee of Krishna ultimately, in the ultimate analysis. They are just covered with different degrees of layers. And our job as teachers in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to try to bring them closer to Krishna as much as possible.
Okay. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, I'm sorry to interrupt. Just a quick correction. You mean Vedavati, not Satyavati.
You are exactly right, Vedavati.
Just because I wanted to clarify.
Yes, Vedavati, yes. Thank you. Okay, Mataji.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Thank you so much
thank
for trying
you,
so hard.
Thank you.
And also, just a quick repetition back to our class today. The Narottam Prabhu's guru was Lochan Das. Srinivas.
Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath.
Srinivas was Gopal Bhatta.
Yes, Mataji.
And Shamananda, who?
Hriday Chaitanya? Yes, Mataji.
And the Shiksha, Jiva Goswami was Shiksha for both Narottam?
All three. Yeah.
Okay.
And when they completed Shiksha under him, he gave them titles. He gave a title to each of them. Srinivas, he gave the title Thakur. Acharya, Srinivas Acharya. Narottam, he gave the title Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur. And Dukhi Krishna, he gave him the title Shamananda. Shamananda was a name given to him by Srimati Radharani herself. So he gave him the title Pandit, Shamananda Pandit.
You're saying it was Jiva Goswami who gave these different names?
Yes, Jiva Goswami gave them the titles, not names.
Yeah, the titles.
So he got a title Thakur like that.
Thakur, Srinivas Acharya.
And Pandit for Shamananda.
Shamananda Pandit.
Pandit.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you, Gaurangi Mataji. Thank you, Komodoki Mataji. Thank you, everyone. Dandavats to all of you.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Very nice discussion. I have heard a long time ago that there was one class that Prabhupada had given, and title of that the lecture was, there's no accident in material world, everything is predestined. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Very, very nice class.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
If no one else has any questions or comments, we can end the class. Thank you all so much for patiently waiting and listening. And very, very nice discussion. Thank you all, Mataji and Prabhuji. We can end the class now. Vansha Kalpataru Vesha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavani Deo Vaishnavi Deo Namo Namaha
Deo Namo Namaha
Kuti Vaishnavranda Ki Jai Shri La Prabhupada Ki Jai Shri Shri Chaitanya Charitam Ki Jai His Grace Adi Gadadhar Prabhu
Ki Jai Adi Gadadhar Prabhu Ki
Jai
Shri La Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Kuti
Vaishnavi Ki Jai Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna